welcome to Speak a Dogcast. My name is David Farb, Animal Behavior Specialist, and I am broadcasting from WOUF Woof Studios in beautiful Palm City, Florida. Thank you so much for joining me once again today. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can also follow me on Instagram at Speak a Dogcast, and if the visual thing is more your thing, you can subscribe to my YouTube channel at Speak a Dogcast as well. If you want to support the show even further, become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/speakadogcast. Yes, and if you love the show, if you love the podcast, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor, scroll down, give me that 5-star rating, leave me a review. I would really appreciate it, guys. Yes. Now on today's show, how to beat the heat with your dog. And we're not quite in summer yet, but man, it is getting hot, especially us Floridians down here. We're already dealing with some of the bad symptoms, if you will, of summer weather. We're already in the 90s down here. It's going to keep climbing. So look, the heat is nothing to joke around about. There's a lot of things you got to know about it. So we're going to talk about how to keep your dog cool, what to look for with overheating, and more importantly, what to do in case of those emergency situations. Then we have a segment on, should we stop breeding dogs? Very interesting question to ask, right? A little philosophical, if you will. We'll talk about all the positives, negatives, and everything in between on that. Then we have the history of Animal Mascots 101, followed by the listener Q&A. If you have any questions for the listener, question and answer, feel free to email me questions@speakadogcast.com or just message me on social media. Question could get featured on the show. Yes. Now, before we get going with today's podcast, I have to give you that trivia question. Today's question is going to be, what is the largest herbivore in North America? Yes, what is the largest herbivore in North America? I will give you the answer to that question somewhere in today's show. So be sure you stick around, sit, stay, and enjoy the podcast. Next on Speak a Dogcast, how to beat the heat with your dog. Now I know, it's not the middle of summer yet, I get it. It's better to have this information before we get into the dead of the heat than wait too long, right? So, and that's the thing, it is May, right? It's May, it's getting hot in some places in Florida, it's getting ungodly hot. We're starting to get highs into the 90s, 90s Fahrenheit. And look, it just straight up, anybody who's new to Florida, when we start getting temperatures consistently in the upper 80s and low 90s, and for that matter in South Florida, look, even in the mid 80s sometimes, it really depends on overcast and sunshine, stuff like that. But guys, the reality is when we get to these temperatures, it gets to a point that it can be downright dangerous for your animals to be outside and even yourselves. So this is not something to take lightly. At the same time, I want you to have fun with your dogs this summer. We're going to talk about that as well. But overheating is something that's very serious and can very quickly turn deadly for dogs. So this is a very serious topic. At the same time, let's have some fun. But I want you guys to be educated and empowered so we can avoid problems. Look, I've unfortunately not in my own care, actually one time, and even then, the dog was starting to overheat. We were slowly, and I saw it, caught it, brought him inside, dealt with it, did what we needed to do. And within 5 minutes, the dog was doing just fine. It was not anything excessive and horrible. That's just it. These things can happen, do happen. But if you're educated, if you're watching, if you know what to look for, it's empowering and it allows you to keep your dog safer. So, new people to Florida, I'm warning you now, it is May, it's getting hot, you guys need to really be aware of this stuff. People just don't understand, like, I'm not meaning this, you guys, you don't know from Florida, you don't get it. It's not what I mean, I just mean that, look, it gets hot up north, okay, like, sure, it gets hot. It gets hot up north, but it does not get Florida hot. When you start combining humidity and the level of heat, especially down here in South Florida, where you actually get below the frost line, guys, it's a different beast. It's a different level of hot, and you have got to be careful. God, I'm wagging my finger. Please be careful. I don't want to see anybody getting overheated. I don't want to see dogs getting overheated. So let's get into it. Let's start talking about it. And the first thing is, especially South Florida, guys, Southeast Florida, a lot of high rises, right? A lot of apartments, a lot of people with a lot of concrete around them. This is a very, very, very important thing. Now, this goes for everybody, not just Floridians, but 5-second rule. The 5-second rule. Guys, if you're taking your dogs outside to go for a walk and you're about to step on concrete or asphalt, you must do the 5-second rule. That is to take your hand, put it to the ground, touch it to the concrete, and hold it there for 5 seconds. If it is too hot to keep your hand there for 5 seconds, you should not be walking your dog on that concrete. period. The problem is when the concrete gets this hot and you walk your dog on it, it is so hot that it literally will blister your dog's pads back. Like that's insane. I know it sounds crazy, but it does. It happens. You can actually blister your dog's pads from the excessive heat from concrete. So you guys have got to be careful. Easy preventative way is that 5-second rule. Please, please, please. I see so many people in the middle of June down here. It blows my mind walking their dogs at 2 in the afternoon on sidewalks. And I'm like, what the hell are you doing? Like, are you insane? First of all, your dog's pads are going to die. And then 2 o'clock in the afternoon in June, your dog could easily overheat being outside for 30 minutes. Like, you would be shocked, guys. It can be so hot here. Okay. So again, though, 5-second rule is everywhere. Everybody needs to practice the 5-second rule when it starts getting into summer because it can be very dangerous and it's an easy way to prevent that blistering. All right. Now let's talk about how do we spot overheating symptoms? What do they look like? Okay. There's a handful of them and it's very simplistic and very easy to spot if you know what to look for. Is your dog excessively panting or hyperventilating? Now, it's one thing if your dog is panting because you've been playing, it's a little hot out, we've only been out there for 5 minutes, and they're panting. Panting is one thing, excessive panting to the point of hyperventilation is a different thing, right? We all know dogs pant to control their body temperature. I had a client years ago in Orlando, and I'm glad she erred on the side of caution, but her paranoia about the dogs panting was insane. She's like, oh my gosh, they're panting. I'm like, well, yeah, it was like December, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's what they do. They pant, like they're outside, they're running. They can't sweat like you and me. That's how they control their body. She goes, yeah, but they're panting. They shouldn't be panting. And I'm like, okay. You can only like kind of scratch your head and shrug at that. You know what I mean? So panting is one thing, excessive panting to a point of hyperventilation, very different. Know the difference. Know what your dog looks like under normal panting circumstances. Kind of sounds funny, but I like it. All right. So what about dryness of the mouth? Yes. If your dog's mouth is excessively dry, or if you see their gums turning very pale. Now, look, this is an important little detail here on the gums part. Guys, whatever you're doing right now, if you're near your dog and your dog is just totally chilling, like it hasn't been exercising a lot or outside recently, I want you to go over and look at your dog. If your dog's body temperature, normal temperature, go over and look at their gums. See what they look like under normal circumstances. So you have a comparison if you do feel like your dog is overheating. Then you can take a look and go, wow, those do look pale compared to normal. Maybe my dog is overheating, right? Okay. How about erratic or rapid pulse? Definitely something you want to check out. Weakness, lethargic. You know, if your dog's acting weak or lethargic or is vomiting. All of these things are definitely signs and symptoms. Guys, if your dog is exhibiting 1, 2, 3 of these symptoms, you need to be moving on to the next step, which is reducing your dog's body temperature, bringing them down if they're overheating. So we're going to talk about how we do that. Now, the first thing you want to do is move your pet to a cooler area. It should be obvious. If you can find some shade, if you can move them inside, even better. But anything cooler than direct sunlight is going to be good. Now, look, let's say you're out hiking on a trail. You do not have the option to move inside. Obviously, you can find a tree, find some shade. But one extra step I want you to take: dig down into the ground, remove some of the top layer of soil, some of the top layer of dirt that's hot or that might be warm. You'll be surprised. If you dig down a couple inches and you put your hand on that dirt, it's actually going to be quite a few degrees cooler than the soil on top. You'll notice dogs will do this when they're hot. They'll dig down a little. Animals in general do this. They dig down a little to get to that cooler sand, that cooler dirt. So anything we can do to get them cooler, right? If you have a fan with you, if you have a fan available, put a fan on them. Not a bad idea to bring those little fans that plug into the bottom of your phones, guys. You're going on a hike. Having all these extra little things with you to help just in case. It's always better to be safe than sorry, right? Now, wet towels. Another thing, if you're going hiking, throw a dry towel in your backpack with you. That way, if you need it, you can pour some water on the towel and cool yourself or your dog down. Now, for your dog, you're going to want to put that wet towel around their neck, under the armpits, or in their crotch area. Those are the places that are going to help cool them down the best. Very important detail on this wet towel, though. Notice I said take a water from your water container. I don't want frigid, ice-cold water. Not a good idea. Guys, when we're talking about cooling humans, dogs, doesn't matter. When we're talking about cooling an animal down, we don't want to use ice. We can actually shock the animal's system by going from excessive heat to excessive cold. So it's important that you use temperate water. You use water just from your water bottle that's not iced down. cool water, not cold water. That is the key here. Okay, so when we're putting water on this towel, we want it to be cool. With that said, let's talk about ice. We don't want to be offering ice. If we have an overheating dog or an overheating person, we do not want to be giving them ice, guys. Everyone thinks we want to give a dog ice water when a dog is overheating. Wrong answer. Again, same thing, that ice water can actually send their system into shock. So you've got to be careful about this. Do not use ice. I'll say it again. Do not use ice when you are trying to cool down your dog. Okay. Now you do want to offer your pet water, but it's, here we are again, no ice water, temperate water. We want to offer water. We do not want to force water. Very important. If we force water on our dogs, we might inadvertently get water in their lungs, and we don't want to fill their water, their lungs up with water, obviously. So we want to offer it on their own accord. Let them take small sips slowly and carefully. Okay. So please be cautious of that. Offer water, little amounts, and temperate temperature, no forcing, okay? So there's great ways we can also keep our dogs cool. Let's talk about if they're not overheating. Let's talk about preventative. How do we have fun with our dogs and keep them cool? Look, again, New Floridians, I'm just saying it out there, like the best way to get your dogs exercised and fun, it's always gonna start with the walk. You hear me say it. We always wanna walk our dogs. However, like my cutoff where I live, about 9:30 a.m. in summertime, I cannot walk my dogs past 9:30 a.m. Can't do it. It's too hot. I cannot do it. They will overheat. And it, and again, we then run into the issue with the concrete being too hot. 9:30 a.m. is about the cutoff for me. So you have to wake up early. Not what you want to hear, but you got to wake up earlier in the summertime to get our dogs exercised. Okay. And then even then, I have to wait till the sun goes down. I have to wait till the sun goes down later in the day if I want to walk them again, or I wasn't able to get the morning walk in for whatever reason, right? Like everybody, I have to wait till the sun goes down. It stinks. It's too hot, guys. It's too hot. That 5-second rule is going to be, you know, there's always exceptions, right? It came and it rained for 4 hours this afternoon. So the concrete's cool. Sure, it's steamy out, but it's not too hot to walk them because there's no sun. Always exceptions, okay? So that's the first thing before, you know, obviously it's not keeping our dog cool, but it's exercising our dogs. So, okay, how do we keep our dogs cool? We can use cooling mats. I love these new cooling mats. They're phenomenal. You've probably seen them around at the pet stores and such. They are worth it, guys. They're really great. The cooling mats do work. They do offer that cooling sensation, and it can help keep your dog a little cooler. You lay one out on the patio when you're hanging out with your dog, let your dog lay on it after a walk. Helps keep them cool. Right now, another thing I like to do is those elevated dog beds. We've all seen in the outdoor elevated dog beds that have like a mesh. Any of you guys that are unfamiliar, it's usually a metal, a nice polished metal frame with a net in the center. And they're usually elevated a couple inches off the ground. Now, I really like these for a lot of reasons. Number one, they're elevated. So your dog isn't sitting on a hot cushion. There's actually air that's able to circulate and flow underneath the bed and around your dog. But one really fun thing I like to do is take a big fan or, you know, and put it right underneath the dog bed. And you're actually pushing air through so it can circulate the air around your dog even better. And again, because it's a fine mesh, the air can go through the dog bed to your dog. Really awesome way to help keep your dogs cool. I'm a big fan of those outdoor dog beds combined with a fan. Okay. How about swimming? Swimming's my favorite summertime activity because we're killing two birds with one stone. We're keeping our dogs cool and we're getting them exercised. Three birds, why not? And they're also having a ton of fun. Okay. It's just like a win-win-win. So when it comes to summer, I'm all about swimming with our pups. Of course, guys, you got to practice safe swimming. We have to talk about it. Yes, safety first. If we are swimming with our dogs out in a public body of water, I don't care how good of a swimmer your dog is, you need to put a life vest on him. The biggest thing is visibility. Get a bright, reflective, bright orange, bright yellow dog vest. Look, there's a reason life vests for human beings are bright in the way they are. And there's a reason why human beings wear life vests, even if you are a good swimmer. Visibility more than anything, people. Okay. If we're in public bodies of water, your dog really needs to have a life vest on if they're swimming in the water. Okay. A couple important things to note about the pool. If your dog is new to the pool, it's very important that you teach your dog where the steps are. Okay. Just want to note that. I like to make sure we do multiple repetitions over the course of a few days, teaching our dog where the steps are to make sure we repeat it over and over and over. So when they do fall in, it's sort of like autopilot. They go right to the steps as opposed to panic mode. Okay. Very, very, very important to teach your dogs where the steps are. Okay. Now, Here we go with Florida again. This isn't just Florida. This is Florida. This is Louisiana, Texas, South Carolina, North Carolina even. And Gators are now making, that's what I'm going to, you know, it's coming. We're talking about Gators. Look, there's even been some proof that Gators are making their way up the Mississippi River. And they've actually, it's arguably, they're arguing that there is an established population on the southwest side of Tennessee. Oh boy, what fun. So, welcome to dealing with Gators, people in West Southwest Tennessee. Look, Gators are not something to be taken lightly during the summer for so many reasons. Look, May through June is mating season for Gators. And then late June through July is nesting season for Gators. And Gators do tend to be a lot more territorial and aggressive during these times. They are not going to discriminate if it's dog or person if you get in the wrong place at the wrong time. I'm not trying to scare people. I'm trying to make you aware. We live in their home. There are millions and millions of alligators in the state of Florida alone, and they are everywhere. You know, the rule is if there's a standing body of water, I don't care how small, how shallow you think it is, there could very well be a gator. We just go with the mantra, if there's a standing body of water, there's a gator in it, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. Guys, you gotta be careful. You've got to stay at least, bare minimum, 10 feet away from the edge of the water with your pets, especially at dawn and dusk. It is so important. I cannot stress this enough, and people who come to our state just don't understand it. We're like mini Australia here, okay? We don't have quite as many things that can kill you, but we have quite a few. You got to be careful in our state, people. This is a wild environment, and most Floridians like myself that are from here, we appreciate that, and we respect that, and we ask that you guys come into our state. Please do the same, okay? It's not the Gators' fault. It is your fault. I mean that very nicely, but it's true. It's not the Gators' fault. They're relying on instinct. You know, Gators are not, you know how big their brains are. Be the human, guys. Be smart. Stay away from water at dawn and dusk, bare minimum 10 feet. But especially during summertime, we all want to take our dogs in the water. We want to swim. You've got to be careful, people. Please, 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 please be careful. All right. And one more comment I want to make, I forgot another fun thing. How could I forget this? My ice treats. Now look, it's not that you can't give your dog ice in the summertime. I want to make a clarifying point on this. It's not that you can't give your dogs ice. It's that we don't want to give our dogs ice if they are overheating. If they're not overheating a normal body temperature, there's nothing wrong with a little bit of ice as a fun treat. One thing I do like to do is take a small mixing bowl, very small, and we can melt, put some ice in it. I usually, you can kind of, oops, I had to whack my camera. You can do it in layers. You can put a little bit of ice in, or put a little bit of water in, freeze it. Then once it's frozen, layer some dog treats, put a little more water in, freeze it, layer it with a few more dog treats. Maybe this is some time for some small pieces of fruit that dogs can have, you know, chunks of banana, something like that. And we freeze it into a ball. And what we have is an ice ball that's got fun treats in it. And your dog has to sit and lick it and try to get to those fun treats. So it's great enrichment. It's a great way to keep your dog active and busy during the summer. And of course, it can help keep them cool too. So I'm all about trying to keep our dogs cool during the summer and active, but sometimes it's a little tough because it can get hot. You guys got to be careful. One other thing we can do is go to the beaches. I love taking my dogs to the beach, but guys, beach sand gets so hot, it might as well be concrete. I need you to play the same game at the beach as you did with the concrete. 5-second rule. If you can't walk down to the beach because it's so blazing hot, please don't do it to your dog. Okay? Really important to think about because I love going to the beach with my dogs during the summer. Such a fun activity to do, but you got to be careful. All right. So guys, remember, there's a lot of important things to look out for when it comes to summertime with your dog. Number one, we want to make sure our dogs are not overheating. Look for those signs. Excessive panting and hyperventilation, dryness of the mouth, paleness of the gums, erratic or rapid pulse, weakness, if your dog is lethargic, and vomiting. Those are the big signs. If your dog is presenting any of these symptoms, we've got to cool them off. Best ways to cool them off are to move them to a cooler area. If you have a fan to cool them down, definitely want to use it. We want to use cool, wet towels, not iced. Remember, we want to avoid ice altogether if we have an overheating dog or person for that matter, okay? Cool, wet towels around the neck, armpits, and crotch, all right? You definitely want to offer water to your dog, remember, but we don't want to force it. Offer it in small amounts. Temperate water, not iced water. Gonna say it again. No more ice. Don't use the ice if your dog is overheating. However, we can use ice to keep our dogs cool if they're not overheating. We can make that fun ice sphere or ice block with treats inside of it. We can take our dogs swimming safely, making sure we're practicing safe swimming, using life vests, looking out for gators. All right. Cooling mats are a great way to keep our dogs cool, as well as using those outdoor elevated dog beds, having a fan on them. Be sure you're careful when you go to the beach. We're gonna find that same thing, that same rule. 5-second rule, guys. Gotta start using your 5-second rule, whether it's concrete, hot sand, whatever. Put your hand to the ground. If you can't hold your hand there for 5 seconds, it's too hot for your dog's feet. All right, so a lot of information to take in, I know, but I want to keep you guys safe. I want to keep your dog safe. Please be safe out there. Have a happy, healthy, and fun summer, and good luck staying cool. Are you tired of your dog barking all the time? Or maybe you want them to stop jumping on people when they come over? Or does your dog take you for a walk instead of the other way around? Well, we can help. At The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, we are committed to improving the relationships and lives people have with their pets. No matter what behavioral issue you are experiencing, from an unruly puppy to more severe issues, we can help. Our virtual training programs are catered to you and your pet and create a training plan that gets results. For more information, you can check out our website at www.thenatureoftraining.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram at Speak a Dogcast. With the ability to connect, teach, and train with pet owners around the world, together we can make a better home for our furry friends. The Nature of Training and Speak a Dogcast, helping you achieve success with your pet. Speak a Dogcast, should we stop breeding dogs? Definitely an interesting question, one to put out there. And, you know, first of all, we need to rescue dogs, guys. Like, right, it goes without saying. I can hear it. A lot of people go, yeah, we should ban breeding. There's so many rescues. Rescues are overflowing. They're full. There's so many sad stories you hear about. Bah, 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 bah. People are returning dogs left and right for dumb reasons. And it's right. There is an issue, right? There is an issue. But is the answer stopping breeding altogether? Now, look, personally, I don't think so. This is my personal, humble, professional opinion. I do not believe breeding or banning breeding is going to be a good idea for anybody, including the dogs. And I will tell you why. At the same time, before we get into that, I am a full advocate for rescuing dogs. I've got all my rescue dogs behind me. My dogs are rescues. I'm not ashamed to admit I've gone to a breeder once before. You know, it's, whatever. I learned things from that experience for sure. And we're going to bring some of that to the table today. So first and foremost, I am a huge advocate of rescue. I do believe everybody should look into rescuing first. Go look at rescuing dogs. We did a segment on it recently. There's so many reasons to rescue. There are breed specific rescues. If you're looking for a certain breed, guys, please research rescuing a dog before you go to a breeder. With that said, like I said, just said a minute ago, I am not anti-breeder. I am not saying we should ban breeding because that is not at all what I believe. Multiple reasons why we need dog breeders, guys. There's a lot of reasons. First and foremost, I'm a believer in history, tradition, preserving it. And you cannot talk about the history of humanity without bringing dogs into the conversation. We could arguably say we are not, we would not be as evolved or where we are in our evolutionary process if it wasn't for our relationship with dogs and dog breeding. You heard me. Whether we didn't start actively breeding dogs to begin with. No, it was sort of a passive experience, but it had to start with some dog hanging around a camp after human beings thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago hunted, threw a piece of food to that wolf, not dog, and the wolf said, "Ooh, free food. I'm going to come back again tomorrow." Before you know it, one of his other wolf buddies noticed. And then before you know it, he breeds and his pups come with him and they see breeding and they see the food. And all of a sudden they start hanging around humans more. And next thing you know, passively, we were breeding. We were helping breed those wolves to become comfortable with human beings. And then down the road, start to rely on human beings. And that's how it all began. And then, yes, in the 1800s, as we've talked about before, the Victorian era, that spurred like 80 to 85% of the breeds that we now know today. So to me, as a form of preservation, tradition, history, from that first perspective, I think it's very important that we preserve a lot of these incredible breeds. Guys, isn't that what, like, don't we love the amazing traits of dogs and the amazing things that make a dog? Well, then guess what? We need to preserve that. Golden Retrievers, Labrador Retrievers, German Shepherds, Dachshunds. I mean, I can think of these dogs that were bred in, for a purpose, for a need, for a reason. So we have a history intertwined with canines, and I think we do ourselves a disservice to forget that history. And breeding is one of the ways we can preserve it. Now, moving on from that, how about genetics? Look, if we just stop dog breeding tomorrow and it was just a free-for-all and all the dogs out on the streets just start mating, sure, I could argue genetic diversity, but I could also argue the opposite. We've got a lot of weird breeds, you know what I mean? Like, we've created a lot of weird dogs for, like, a wiener dog, like I said, a dachshund. We know they have back issues sometimes, and if we bred that with, like, a Great Dane, do you think that's going to be a genetically healthy dog? Probably not. And we wouldn't be able to control that if it was just a free-for-all and there was no such thing as breeding anymore. I can argue both sides of the aisle. Isn't that amazing? It's almost like to say both sides of the aisle have valid points and both sides have total BS. Weird. It's almost like I could take that and apply it to other things in life, other opinions in life, and go, both sides of the aisle have some valid points and both sides of the aisle have BS. Weird. I'm gonna let you sit on that one for a second. Stew. Okay, so breeding. There are so many reasons we should breed dogs. We need to be able to retain the good traits. Look, again, we have created a lot of bad problems, a lot of bad health problems and health issues in dogs by the way we've selectively bred them. And we can start to at least somewhat undo our mistakes from the past by breeding properly, by regulating breeding, and it's something we don't do. And so I think that's kind of why we've gotten out of this imbalance, is we have unregulated breeding, unregulated rescues, and all this crap is just up in the air now, and you have everything and anything in between. And then you get extremists that go, bad breeding. No, we need to euthanize all the dogs and the rescues. I mean, you hear it all, right? Like, nuts. It's nuts. So with that said, I do believe that, you know, we need both. We need rescues because there's all kinds of situations, and we need dog breeding for preservation, genetics, the better health of dogs. How about all the research? And there's research that's done from breeding dogs. You know, we're talking about reputable breeders that actually are offering information to companies that are doing research on medicines, on food, on genetics for dogs, all these things that without breeding, we may not have a way to get this information, you know? So the good that comes out of proper breeding and responsible breeding, this is why I'm pro-responsible breeding. I love it. I think it can be a wonderful thing. Now, at the same time, guys, like I said, we've created some pretty messes of dogs. And I see the perspective of people saying certain dogs shouldn't be bred anymore from a health perspective. And I get it. And I kind of agree with them to some point, right? Like, I kind of agree there are certain breeds out there that maybe we just shouldn't be breeding anymore because it's not a healthy specimen. The dog physically suffers. And how is that fair? You know what I mean? Like, at the same time, let's say we outlawed French bulldogs, right? That's one of the ones everybody goes for. Let's say we outlawed French bulldogs tomorrow. Would create a black market real fast overnight, wouldn't it? All of a sudden, those $15,000 French bulldogs are now $30,000 because you're not allowed to breed them. So the problem becomes, how do you find the balance? And I think the answer is regulation and breeding. We regulate breeding to create higher standards for health, for genetics, for research, for the better well-being of the animal. So should we stop breeding dogs? No, I don't think that is the answer. As a matter of fact, I know that's not the answer because I know the other unintended consequences that it will create. You know, like, there's all these people that are screaming out there, stop breeding dogs. And it's this emotional, like, And sometimes we don't really think about the unintended consequences when we make an emotional response or emotional decision. I'll let you guys sit on that one for a second, too. You know what I'm saying? We can't necessarily make a logical, sound decision as a human being when we're having an emotional response to it. And so when people make these emotional, ban all of these things, ban this, ban that. First of all, do you even think about what you're saying? Second of all, do you think about the consequences that are going to come with it? No. So, you know, it's just, it's a touchy subject and it's a tough subject. Should we stop breeding dogs? Answer is no. I mean, that's just me. Answer is no. Should we create a better environment for breeding dogs? Yes, through regulation, through understanding, through education, through empowerment. And at the same time, we should be pushing rescuing dogs. Guys, please go rescue a dog. And you know, like, I get it. Some people don't want an 80-pound dog. Some people don't want an active dog that needs an hour and a half long walk. And so you go for the Shih Tzu. You go for the lap dog, the dog that was bred to be a lap dog. And I get that. I get that. And if you go to a rescue, you know, you're not necessarily going to walk in and see a Shih Tzu every day. You're just not. So once again, should those people be denied a dog because we shouldn't breed dogs? Blah, 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 blah. Shih Tzus are another one I think should be preserved. They're an old, ancient breed. It's an amazing cultural, historical part of human beings. I believe in preserving that and not destroying it. So food for thought. There's a lot of good, a lot of bad, a lot of middle ground when it comes to breeding, rescuing, okay? Well, rescuing, it's all good. Like, that's a thing. I shouldn't have said that, because rescuing, it's all good. There's no harm in rescuing, guys. Go rescue dogs. Rescue, rescue, rescue. Go adopt a dog. Like, my goodness. Can't stress it enough. But there are needs for guys, what about specific tasks? What about bomb-sniffing dogs? What about drug-sniffing dogs? What about dogs that are taught, a diabetic alert dog? There we go, that's what I'm trying to say. Diabetic alert dogs. I hate to say it, but some breeds are just going to be better than others for these specific tasks. That was the whole point of humans breeding dogs to begin with, was creating specific tasks for these animals to do, accomplish, and thrive at. So you're telling me you don't want to be... You don't want dogs to work properly and help work alongside human beings and save lives? Bomb-sniffing dogs? I got news for you. Shih Tzu ain't going to be the best bomb-sniffing dog. It's just not going to work. You know? There's a need. There's a need for breeding dogs. But we should be doing it responsibly. We should be doing it smart. And most of us should be looking into rescuing a dog first. So a lot of food for thought today. You know, I hope you guys learned a little something and think about what I've said on that with breeding dogs and more. And, and good luck to you selecting your next pup. But I don't think that outright outlawing breeding is the way to go. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the history of Animal Mascots 101. Today, we'll be talking about the University of Montana. Now, the University of Montana was founded on February 13th, 1893, not long after the state of Montana was admitted to the Union in 1889. The state of Montana is located in the northwest with a lot of forest, a lot of wilderness, and the mascot chosen would be a reflection of this geographical location. At the University of Montana, they are known as the Grizzlies, with their mascot, Monty. Montana, Monty, yes. Now, from early on, the athletic teams were often referred to as the Grizzlies, a reference to the large and formidable grizzly bear. Starting in 1897, the school was loaned a live bear named Teddy to represent the school at games and events. Over the years, the school had to actually replace the bears often due to the logistics of caring for and moving around full-grown bears. By the 1960s, the school had stopped using a live bear, and mascots in the 70s and 80s were actually sponsored. It's kind of crazy. Yeah, there was actually, to begin with, Ham's Beer Bear. You kind of have to laugh at that. Yes, an actual beer brand sponsoring a college sports team. There was a sandwich shop at one point sponsoring Piccolo Pete's. Then even the Domino's Pizza mascot, the Noid, was representing the school, which is nuts. Even Ronald McDonald, like crazy. Okay. At one point in the 80s, a local auto shop named Grizzly Auto, Auto Shop, A-U-T-O, sponsored the mascot with the Bears' name being Grizzly Auto, O-T-T-O. Now, early mascots were actually meant to look ferocious and aggressive, but by the 90s, the mascot took on a more approachable look that was more friendly to families and kids. Now, he is represented at athletic games, pep rallies, and community events as well. His popularity continues to grow among fans, and even has a children's book written about him called The Great Monty Mystery, written by university alum Jennifer Newbold. Now, Monty has been nominated for the Mascot of the Year competition 5 times, winning twice in 2002 and again in 2004. He was also featured in a Super Bowl commercial with Joe Montana. Next on Speak a Dogcast, it's the listener Q&A. The first question today comes from Barry from Orlando, Florida. Barry says, my neighbor's dog will not stop coming up to the fence in our backyard and barking aggressively at my dog. He runs back and forth and he goes nuts. It's clearly not playful and he makes my dog uneasy. Now, at first, my dog has kept his distance, but now he's not liking it, barking back and even getting a little bit closer toward the fence. I've asked my neighbor to try and control his dog, but he doesn't care. I really just don't know what to do here. I don't want my dog being uncomfortable in his own backyard or practicing any aggressive tendencies. Barry, great question. Thank you so much for this question. This is a tough one because, yeah, at the end of the day, you cannot control your neighbor. You cannot control your neighbor's dog. What is the one thing you can do? Control your dog. Okay, now I know your dog's not out of control. I'm not blaming you. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I am saying is we can at least try and look. It's tough because I don't see exactly, you know, I'm not there. I can't see just how intense your neighbor's dog is. But sometimes that over intensity can, yeah, make your dog downright uncomfortable. And what I want to try to do is train your dog to ignore that stuff. Okay. Look, it's tough when it's at their home. It's one thing when we're walking by a house, we're out on the walk and there's a dog randomly in a backyard that barks at us aggressively and we walk by it and it's over with, doesn't happen every day, whatever. It's another thing when this dog is, you know, practicing this behavior day in, day out, whether your dog is in the backyard or not. I'm sure it's hearing this at some point with that dog acting aggressive. The dog is marking its territory. There's scent involved. This is not an easy thing necessarily to deal with. And it stinks because I also feel bad for your neighbor's dog. You know what I mean? That poor dog is acting anxious because no one's told it not to. I mean, that's this dog is clearly stuck in it. Anyway, so what can you do? You can train your dog to ignore it. How do we do that? Look, it's a process. This isn't going to be an overnight thing necessarily. It might be. Look, your dog might give up on it like that, to be fair. Sometimes they do. But what I want you to do is hang out in the backyard with your dog. If you need a leash for this, leash your dog up. If your dog's cool and will listen, because you know it sounds like your backyard is contained, awesome. But I'm concerned. I don't want your dog over engaging with your neighbor's dog. And that's why the leash might be helpful to help redirect and guide some of your dog's focus. But really, this is very simplistic. The whole idea is we just need to redirect your dog's focus away from your neighbor's dog and reward them for ignoring your neighbor's dog. We don't want to make it a big deal. We don't want to make this a huge thing. It's just going to be, hey, come here, good boy, and feed him a treat once he comes to you and looks at you. Couple key things here. First thing is, let's say my neighbor is, I mean, let's just, you know, I'm trying to, you want to redirect, I'm sorry, I'm making this more complicated than it needs to be. You need to redirect your dog's focus away from your neighbor's fence, right? So if your neighbor is over there to the right, you need to be sitting more to the left. So that way, when your dog does redirect, their focus actually turns away from the neighbor, from the fence to you. You don't want to be sitting in the same line of sight as the fence, right? Like, I don't want to be sitting so the fence is behind me and I'm redirecting my dog and he looks at the fence, looks at me, looks at the fence, looks at me. I want him to completely do a 180, turn around, turn away from the neighbor and the dog and look at me. We need to actually change that focus, not just like kind of half redirect it. It's a very important detail, okay? A lot of people will almost even try to play, what's the word I'm looking for? They're trying to make the other dog a forbidden fruit and will get in the way and try to block their vision. No, none of that. Redirect your dog, 180 degree turn away from it and reward them. That's it. Now your dog's going to probably go right back to looking when it barks again. No big deal. Kissy noise, call her name, his name, sorry. Redirect. He looks at you, feed him. Okay. Short and simple. We're going to stay outside for 10 minutes, maybe at most, doing this the first few times. And then we go back inside and it's not a big deal. The whole idea, the whole concept is we want to show your dog every time you give up, every time you walk away, every time you redirect your focus away from that dog, you get rewarded. Very simplistic, very basic, but it's teaching your dog a very valuable skill, and that's to ignore anxious dogs. Now, there's another way we can tackle this. We can also go to a dog park. You know, we're going to go to a dog park, but we're not going inside. We're going to stay outside the dog park, and we're going to let all the dogs inside the dog park do their thing. We're going to stay outside the fence somewhere around the dog park safely, and we're going to teach your dog to ignore the chaos. You know, it may not necessarily be aggression coming from the dog park, but it's barking, it's craziness, it's running, it's movement. It's some of the similar symptoms, if you will, of what you're dealing with at home. So if you can recreate it by going to the dog park, teaching your dog to ignore it, same exercise, turn, look away from the dog park, reward. All we're doing is teaching your dog you don't have to engage or over-engage in chaos, movement, barking, these kind of things. And it can help be a building block to taking that information back home and applying it with your neighbor's dog. Like I said, this is a process. This is not an overnight thing because your dog, damn straight, you know, of course your dog is going to go, hey, there's somebody barking. There's a dog aggressively. It's like, they're supposed to protect their home. It's what they're supposed to do. But if it's a constant thing, if it's a constant problem, if it's something that happens day after day after day, and it's not actually a threat, we've got to teach your dog to ignore it. All right. So sorry, long answer there. I know, Barry, I hope that helps you out. Good luck. Let me know if you need any more help. Next question. This comes from Sandra from Fort Wayne, Indiana. Sandra says, I'm having trouble getting my nervous rescue dog to take treats. She does not, she's not the best eater to begin with. I leave food down for her and she doesn't eat everything all at once. I try to give her different treats, but she doesn't show any interest. I want to train her. I want to make her a more confident dog, but I can't figure out how to get her over this. Sandra, thank you for the question. Look, first things first, let's talk about this. The food bowl being down, if you're leaving food down for your dog to graze all day, you actually are inadvertently making your dog more anxious. Okay. Look, dogs aren't predators by nature. They're not foragers. They're not grazers. They're not cows. They're not horses. They're not goats. No, they are predators by nature. And with a predator, food doesn't just simply present itself all the time. There isn't just meat lying around the forest for a predator to eat, right? They have to hunt. So food being down and available as like a grazing type of method is not a natural thing for your dog. Okay. So look, you're inadvertently creating anxiety by leaving that food down. Now, if your dog already came to you as a rescue dog, nervous to begin with, then this is kind of just exacerbating the situation and the problem. So what you need to do is you need to pull the food up. You need to put the food down for 3 to 5 minutes. If your dog doesn't eat, you need to pull it up. You put it back down at dinner time, same thing, 3 to 5 minutes. She doesn't eat, pull it up. Okay. Your dog will not starve herself. It's not going to happen. Okay. She's not going to starve herself. She will eat at some point. I want you to offer the food. That's the thing. And you can offer treats throughout the day as well. There's no problem. Randomly, handful of times throughout the day, try to offer a meaty, delicious treat. Absolutely. At some point, she's going to take some food and realize, hey, this isn't the end of the world. That was actually pretty darn good. I want to do that again. Okay. Hierarchy of needs, people. That's what's going to kick in here. Now, of course, look, you always need to make sure your dog is medically sound, healthy, for lack of a better way to say it, medically sound. There you go. You need to make sure your dog's healthy because there's only two reasons a dog won't eat. Either there is something medically wrong, and that's why I want to clear any medical or biological problems. Make sure you're getting your dog checked out by a vet first. Very important. Okay. That's one reason a dog won't eat is there is something biologically, medically wrong with them. The second reason a dog won't eat is anxiety. It's that simple. It's two things. So if there's nothing medically wrong with your dog, and again, please get your dog checked out before you do this. Then we have to take it from a behavioral training standpoint. Your dog has formed a pattern of not eating for whatever reason. I can't tell you why that is. You probably don't know either. Your dog probably came to you like this. But we don't want to coddle them. Instead, we want to form a new pattern. Food comes down 3 to 5 minutes. If you don't eat then, it disappears and doesn't come back till dinner. They're going to learn real fast, holy crap, I'm hungry. I didn't get to graze. I better eat. And before you know it, your dog is eating their whole meal in one sitting, which is much healthier for them. Okay. So it's a little tough love. But this is what gets dogs over anxiety. I've dealt with this many, 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 many times with quote unquote picky eaters. Guys, dogs are not picky eaters to some, like, don't get me wrong, to some degree, they're going to like a certain flavor more than others. But a dog is a predator. When food presents itself, they should eat it because they don't know when food is going to come again. So it is not a natural thing for a dog to not eat. There is something getting in the way, whether it is biological, medical, or behavioral. Really, Sandra, that's what it's going to take to rid this anxiety. A little tough love and a little understanding of how dogs are built and wired, so that way we can tap into that and get your dog eating healthily, correctly. There you go. So I hope that helps out, Sandra. Let me know how it goes and if you have any more questions. The answer to today's trivia question, what is the largest herbivore in North America? It's the American bison. That's going to wrap up the podcast today. Thank you so much for listening in. If you haven't clicked that subscribe or that follow button, do so right now. New episodes come out every Wednesday, and you're going to want to check them out. You can follow me on Instagram at SpeakADogCast, subscribe to my YouTube channel at SpeakADogCast, and become a patron of the show today, patreon.com/SpeakADogCast. If you love the show, if you love what you're hearing, do me a favor, scroll down, give me that 5-star rating or a great review. I would appreciate it. I want to thank my patrons, my pup supporter, Regula Wright, and my dog friend, Maureen Crossan. Have a wonderful week, and don't forget, get out there and walk your dog.